The water is calm, but the clock is not. Just after sunrise, a small research boat drifts above a reef that is already half gone. The coral below is pale, broken, quiet. Marine biologists move fast, hands steady, voices low. What they release into the water today has only hours to live. Tiny coral eggs and sperm meet in controlled conditions, then spill into open sea where heat, sediment, and chance decide everything. This is assisted fertilization, a last-ditch tool against years of bleaching, storms, and neglect. No one here calls it a cure. They call it a gamble. Along the Dominican coast, reefs once softened waves, fed families, and pulled tourists underwater. Now they crumble faster than they can grow. The scientists know the math. Ocean temperatures keep rising, funding runs thin, failure is common. Still, they lean over the rail and let the embryos go. If they survive the day, it will already be a win. Chapter 1. Set up and stakes, the boat leaves the dock before full daylight and heads east along the coast of the Dominican Republic. The water looks calm from the surface. Below it, the reef tells a different story. Marine biologists gather near the stern, checking coolers and sealed containers. Their movements are practiced and quiet. This work depends on timing more than talk. The reef they are heading toward once stretched thick and bright along this section of coast. Old photographs show branching coral packed so tight that fish barely slipped through. Today, large patches are broken, pale, or gone. Years of warming water weakened the coral first. Stronger storms followed and finished what heat began. Each hurricane tore chunks loose and scattered them across the seafloor. For coastal towns, the damage is not abstract. Reefs slow incoming waves. When they erode, storms hit harder and eat away at beaches and roads. Fishers noticed the change early. Certain species stopped showing up in traps, others grew smaller, trips grew longer and less predictable. Tourism operators saw it too. Dive guides adjusted routes to avoid lifeless zones. Some visitors stopped coming back. The scientists do not frame this mission as rescue. They call it intervention. The reef cannot heal fast enough on its own, not anymore. Assisted coral fertilization is one response. It does not rebuild reefs overnight. It gives coral a chance to restart its life cycle at scale. On the boat, equipment is laid out in order. Collection containers, temperature monitors, mesh release bags. Each item has a narrow window where it works. Coral reproduction happens only a few nights a year. It depends on water temperature, lunar cycles, and calm seas. Miss the window and the year is lost. The team arrives at the site as the sun clears the horizon. The water shifts from dark blue to clear green. The reef edge becomes visible beneath the hull. A diver slips into the water to confirm conditions. Visibility is good, currents are manageable. There is no time to waste. The damaged reef is mapped using fixed markers placed during earlier surveys. Some coral heads still show signs of life. Others are rubble fields. Baseline measurements were taken weeks earlier. Coral cover percentages, species presence, structural complexity. The numbers were not encouraging. This is why the team is here now. They are not restoring the past. They are trying to prevent total collapse. Assisted fertilization begins on land. Coral eggs and sperm are collected during spawning events and mixed under controlled conditions. The goal is to increase successful fertilization rates before releasing embryos back into the sea. The embryos are fragile. Temperature shifts can kill them. Sediment can smother them. Predators can consume them in minutes. Everything today depends on precision. Containers are opened only when the boat is in position. Water samples are checked one last time. The lead biologist gives a brief instruction. No speeches. Everyone knows the sequence. Divers enter the water carrying release frames. These structures hold larvae in place long enough to increase settlement chances. They are anchored near surviving coral patches. From the surface, the reef looks still. Underwater, it is busy with motion. Fish dart between shadows. Loose coral fragments shift with the current. The first release begins. Clouded water drifts downward as embryos disperse. There is no visible reaction from the reef. This moment is always unsettling. Months of preparation reduced to minutes of release. After that, control ends. The biologists watch their instruments. Temperature remains within limits. Currents hold steady. Conditions are better than expected. But experience tempers optimism. Previous attempts elsewhere failed under similar conditions. Survival rates often drop sharply within the first day. A second release follows, then a third. Each is logged with time, depth, and coordinates. The reef here sits near coastal development. Runoff after heavy rain can blanket the area in sediment. A single storm can undo everything. That risk hangs over the operation. Weather forecasts are checked repeatedly. No one fully trusts them. The science behind assisted fertilization is sound. Coral reproduction has been studied for decades. What remains uncertain is scale. Small pilot projects show promise. Translating them into reef-wide recovery is another matter. Funding limits how often these efforts can happen. Staff limits how many sites can be covered. Climate pressure does not slow down to match either. As the morning progresses, the boat drifts slightly. Anchors are adjusted. Divers return to the surface one by one. Their reports are brief, no immediate problems, no unexpected die-off observed. That does not mean success. At this stage, survival is counted in hours, not years. The team begins packing equipment. Samples are stored for later analysis. Data is backed up twice. Onshore labs will track settlement rates and early growth if larvae attach successfully. Most will not. This reality shapes every decision. No one promises recovery. They promise effort. Along the coast, communities wait without knowing the details. For them, reef health ties directly to income and safety. A healthy reef means calmer shorelines during storms. It means fish populations have shelter to rebound. It means tourism has something real to offer. Without reefs, erosion accelerates, fishing pressure intensifies, coastal defenses grow expensive and artificial. The scientists understand this context. It is why they work under pressure. It is why they accept failure as part of the process. As the boat turns back toward shore, the reef disappears beneath glare and distance. The embryos drift unseen, carried by current and chance. The first destabilizing truth settles in. Intervention may buy time, but it cannot replace lost balance alone. What happens next depends on survival rates no one can predict yet. It also depends on choices made far from this reef. For now, the work moves to waiting. The reef has been given a chance. Whether it takes hold remains unanswered. Chapter 2, Escalation and Reversal. The waiting begins almost immediately, and it is not passive. Within hours of the release, monitoring teams split between the water and the lab. Every stage the coral larvae pass through carries a different risk, and most failures happen early. In a temporary field lab near the coast, seawater tanks hum quietly. Temperature sensors flash steady readings. Inside the tanks, a fraction of the fertilized larvae are held back for observation. They drift like dust in a sunbeam, barely visible unless the light hits them right. Out on the reef, divers return to the settlement frames. These structures are simple by design. Flat surfaces, rough enough for larvae to grip. Nothing decorative, nothing extra. The first checks are discouraging. Some larvae are missing. Predation is the likely cause. Small fish and invertebrates consume coral larvae without effort. This loss is expected. The problem is scale. Too much loss too fast, and the project collapses before it begins. Water temperature creeps upward by mid-morning. It is still within acceptable range, but the margin is thin. 1 degree higher and stress responses begin. A call comes in from the shoreline station. Sediment levels are rising slightly. There has been overnight runoff from inland rain. This was not in the forecast. The team adjusts monitoring intervals. Divers shorten their cycles to reduce stress and increase coverage. Assisted fertilization does not shield coral from the environment. It only improves the odds at the starting line. After that, the ocean decides. In the lab, early cell division is confirmed in several samples. That is a positive sign. Fertilization worked. Development has begun. No one celebrates. Development does not guarantee settlement. Most larvae will fail to attach to the reef. Many will drift away and die. By the second day, fatigue sets in. The work runs long hours and demands constant focus. Data logs fill quickly. Patterns are hard to spot this early. A senior researcher reviews numbers late into the night. Survival rates hover just above the minimum threshold considered viable. Any drop could end the effort. At the same time, pressure builds from outside the project. Local stakeholders want updates. Funding partners want reassurance. No one wants bad news. The team responds carefully. They report facts only. Early survival is mixed. Outcomes remain uncertain. Along the coast, fishers talk among themselves. Some remember when the reef still broke waves before they reached shore. Others know only the damaged version. One diver speaks with a fishing cooperative leader between monitoring shifts. The conversation is short and direct. If the reef dies, fishing gets harder. If it recovers, it takes years. There is no illusion of quick payoff. That honesty matters. Back underwater, the first real setback hits. A current shift pushes warmer surface water over the site for several hours. Temperatures spike just enough to cause concern. When divers check the frames again, larval presence has thinned further. The loss rate accelerates. In the lab, the same pattern appears. Stress markers rise in controlled samples exposed to slightly warmer water. The reversal is not dramatic. It is quiet and cumulative. Each small loss compounds the last. A debate surfaces within the team. Should the technique be modified midstream? Should future releases move deeper? Should shading be added? Changing variables now risks invalidating data. Leaving things as they are risks losing everything. The lead scientist makes the call. No mid-course changes. Data integrity matters, even if the result is failure. That decision weighs on everyone. The project is not just an experiment. It is a lifeline many people are watching. By day three, settlement becomes the only metric that matters. Larvae must attach soon or perish. Divers document the reef in close detail. Cameras scan settlement surfaces inch by inch. The first confirmed attachment appears late in the afternoon. It is small, barely noticeable, but it is real. That single attachment shifts the mood slightly. It does not change the outcome yet, but it proves possibility. More attachments follow. Still sparse, still fragile, survival remains uncertain. The team calculates provisional settlement rates. They are low, but higher than previous attempts without assisted fertilization. This is the midpoint turn. The effort is neither a failure nor a success. It sits on a narrow edge. The question sharpens. Can this method work beyond a controlled pilot? Can it scale before reefs vanish entirely? Scaling requires resources the team does not have. Boats, staff, long-term monitoring, and political backing all cost money and time. The reef does not wait for approvals. Environmental stress continues. Another temperature spike flattens gains overnight. Several attached larvae bleach and detach. The scientists record it all. No language softens the data. Loss is part of the record. Local divers volunteer time to assist with monitoring. Their presence helps, but they cannot change the physics of warming water. One of them points out areas of the reef that still host fish nurseries, patches where complexity remains. Those spots become priority zones for observation. If larvae survive anywhere, it will be there. By the end of the week, attachment numbers stabilize. They do not grow quickly. They do not collapse entirely. This stability is unexpected. It suggests a narrow window where survival is possible. The team documents every variable: light levels, flow rates, microhabitat differences. Assisted fertilization shows promise here, but only under tight conditions. Outside those margins, it fails. That realization reframes the project. This is not a universal fix. It is a tool that works in specific places at specific times. Some funders will see that as a limitation. Others will see it as a path forward. As monitoring continues, attention shifts to what comes next. Even if these corals survive initial settlement, growth takes years. Storms will come, heat waves will return, human pressure will persist. The reef is not saved by this effort. It is tested. On the final monitoring day of this phase, divers surface with mixed expressions. Enough larvae have attached to justify continued observation. Enough have died to temper expectations. The narrowing window is still open, but barely. The escalation has revealed the limits of intervention. The reversal has shown that effort alone cannot overpower environment. What remains unanswered is whether these early gains justify expansion or signal a need for deeper change beyond science. The larvae cling to the reef, small and vulnerable. Their survival now depends on forces larger than the team that placed them there. Chapter 3: Resolution and Aftermath. By the time the final monitoring phase begins, the work has shifted from action to reckoning. The reef off the coast of the Dominican Republic no longer feels like a site of intervention. It feels like a ledger. Every surviving coral recruit is an entry. Every loss is recorded without commentary. Divers return to the settlement frames at first light. Their movements are slower now, deliberate. At this stage, disturbance can be as damaging as heat or sediment. The reef needs stillness to hold what remains. The surviving coral larvae are small, almost easy to miss. They appear as faint, irregular dots clinging to rough surfaces. Each one marks a successful passage through fertilization, drift, predation, and attachment. That chain is fragile. Break it anywhere, and nothing follows. The team begins short-term comparisons against baseline data gathered before the release. Coral cover has not changed in any meaningful way. Structural complexity remains low. Fish behavior is largely the same. No one expected otherwise. What matters here is proof of process, not visible transformation. Assisted fertilization worked in limited conditions. That fact is now supported by evidence. The scientists separate what they know from what they do not. They know some larvae survived initial settlement. They know survival rates were higher than natural spawning events observed in similarly damaged reefs. They do not know how many will reach maturity. Growth will be slow. Coral adds millimeters, not meters, each year. One strong storm can erase a season of progress. One prolonged heat wave can bleach what has barely begun to live. This is where the cost becomes clear. Assisted fertilization demands coordination, timing, and skilled labor. Boats, dive time, lab work, and monitoring add up quickly. Scaling this effort across entire reef systems would strain current budgets. There is also a human cost. The team has worked under constant pressure for weeks. Long days in heat and water wear on bodies and focus. This work cannot be sustained indefinitely without support. Community leaders are briefed with care. There is no celebration. There is no promise. The message is restrained. Early signs of success exist. Long-term recovery is uncertain. Fishers ask practical questions. Will this bring fish back? Will it protect the coast? Will it matter in 5 years? The answers are honest. Not yet. Maybe. Only if other pressures ease. Tourism operators listen closely. Some want optimism. Others already plan for decline. The reef's future affects investment decisions, insurance costs, and livelihoods. The scientists stress one point repeatedly. Coral restoration does not replace emission reduction, coastal management, or water quality control. It buys time. Nothing more. Runoff from development still clouds nearshore waters after heavy rain. Plastic debris still drifts through currents. Anchors still scar shallow reefs. These forces do not pause for pilot projects. Data from the settlement phase is compiled and reviewed. The numbers are modest. They do not suggest rapid recovery. They suggest possibility under narrow conditions. That distinction matters. In the world of conservation, exaggerated success stories attract funding but undermine trust. This project avoids that trap. The final assessment states clearly that assisted fertilization is not a cure. It is a tool that works best where reefs retain some structure, where water quality is managed, and where thermal stress stays within limits. Without those conditions, results collapse. The reef itself offers no commentary. Fish move through damaged zones as they always have. Algae still competes for space. Life continues unevenly. One diver notes a juvenile fish sheltering near a settlement frame. It is a small observation. It does not enter the final report as evidence of recovery. It is simply noted. As equipment is removed, care is taken not to disturb attached corals. Frames will remain in place for future monitoring. The site transitions from active experiment to long observation. The team begins preparing findings for publication and review. Methods are documented in detail. Failures are included alongside successes. Transparency is treated as part of the work. Policymakers will read these reports differently than scientists. Some will see opportunity. Others will see cost without guaranteed return. The reef does not operate on political timelines. Coral growth does not align with election cycles or funding windows. The scientists understand this mismatch. It shapes how they frame their conclusions. They state plainly that coral conservation now exists in a race against warming seas. Assisted fertilization can shift odds locally. It cannot reverse global trends. Responsibility therefore expands beyond the water. Coastal development policies matter. Waste management matters. Energy decisions made far inland matter. Without those changes, restoration efforts remain defensive. As the project closes, the final dive is quiet. No releases, no instruments deployed, just observation. The reef looks much as it did weeks earlier. Pale in places, broken in others. But under close inspection, there are signs of persistence. They are small, they demand patience. The final line of the internal report is cautious. Early stage coral recruitment achieved under assisted fertilization in controlled conditions. Long-term survival unproven. That sentence carries weight. It acknowledges effort without overstating impact. The cost of this work is not just measured in dollars or hours. It is measured in restraint, in resisting the urge to promise more than evidence allows. The reef now holds a future that is conditional. Survival depends on storms that have not yet formed, temperatures that have not yet peaked, and choices that extend far beyond this coastline. The scientists leave the site knowing they have done what they could within their scope. They have not saved the reef. They have kept a door open. Whether that door stays open depends on actions that follow.